I'm Mike Levin, and I come from Tufts University.
Mike, how would you describe yourself?
Well, originally I was trained in computer science. I worked in artificial intelligence and artificial life, and my interests were in modeling complex adaptive systems to understand how we could make robots and flexible systems that repair themselves and reproduce and so on. After that, I got a PhD degree in genetics because I thought it was really important to understand how the living world solves these problems.
And you were giving a fascinating talk today about electrical fields in biology, and you started off looking at salamanders.
Yes, so the salamander is an excellent system because we have this complex vertebrate animal here that's able to regenerate limbs and eyes and jaws and parts of its brain and restore them perfectly throughout adulthood. And of course, this is the dream of biomedicine, and so I think learning from these systems are absolutely key.
And even when you were growing a tumor on the leg and then cutting off the leg, and the tumor helped regenerate the leg, is that correct?
So this is not our work. This is something that's been done since the 40s, and in fact has not been looked at since then, and I think it's a very profound result. What it shows is that the tumor actually becomes normalized as the limb regenerates. So the active patterning influence that the body exerts during regeneration is able to bring tumor cells under control and cause them to function as normal cells within the body plan. So I think that has real profound implications for the way we address and understand cancer.
You did a variety of experiments using electrical fields on single cells and tissue. Can you describe some of these for me, please?
Yeah. So we actually do not use electric field application at all. We are working with voltage gradients that are endogenous, that are native to the cells. The cells are generating these voltage gradients. We don't apply any external electric fields. We are interested in the patterns of difference of voltage gradients among different cells, and we've spent the last 10 years developing molecular tools for functionally perturbing them. So we have ways of seeing these voltage maps in embryos and in tumors in vivo, and we have ways of modulating them quite specifically. And so we've been able to show that when you change these voltage gradients, you can make very targeted changes in pattern. So we can, for example, cause the regeneration of legs and tails. We can cause tail wounds to form ahead in worms instead of forming the tail. We can induce cells in the body to become eyes, to make full, normally patterned eyes, and so on. So a large scale of body structures are determined by the voltage gradients, and we've developed tools to allow control of them.
And I think you were saying that the voltage gradients come before any chemical signals are given off that can lead to these changes.
Well, in terms of normal events, there's a cycle where genetic information, such as the expression of channels and pump genes, are what causes these electrical gradients. But the electrical gradients then change gene expression, so they change the position and the amounts of these ion channels. And so it's a big cycle, so to speak. The one changes the other. So you can't really say which is primary. You know, basically it's a circle. They feed each other. But in terms of with the tumor data, what we showed is that we can actually see, and this is still unpublished data, but we've shown that we can actually detect cells that are going to make tumors before it becomes anatomically obvious that they're going to do so.
And you were showing that you could in fact disrupt the tumors to actually turn them back to something else.
What we've shown to date is that we can suppress the proliferation of tumors even though they're still expressing the oncogene, and we can show that in certain cases, cells that otherwise would have gone on to be tumors, we can cause them to become other structures. We still have a long way to go towards sort of full normalization of an ongoing tumor. We have not shown that yet.
Another thing that you were doing, which I think could be very useful in cancer prevention, is you were finding a way of visualizing tumors before they could be seen by normal methods.
Exactly, yeah. Part of the changes that occur during tumorigenesis, when cells stop obeying the normal patterning cues of the body, you can see some of these changes by an aberrant physiological signature. And so one of the things we're doing is using fluorescent dyes that report various electrical aspects of these cells to try and define a signature by which these cells can be non-invasively visualized.
And what you were suggesting was you would bathe the tumors and the cells around the tumors in some sort of dye that you would then be able to pick up using electrical signals.
So the dye is fluorescent, so you just pick it up with a camera. It fluoresces to different degrees depending on the voltage. So the sort of dream technology here is that this is a diagnostic tool where you can bathe the skin or the oral mucosa or any other part of the body in these dyes, and then you simply use a camera to pick up the... And you could also use it to visualize the tumor margins during surgery when the surgeon is trying to figure out how much to cut.
And this isn't some far-flung dream. I mean, this is something that you can see now using cameras.
Yeah, this works now in our frog system. The trick is to sort of move it towards a mammalian system that has real clinical relevance, and we have collaborators with whom we'd like to do that. We have not done that yet.
How much smaller can the tumors be that you can pick up than they would be through normal visualization?
In the frog, we can do this long before any would be picked up by normal visualization systems. How that's going to play out in a clinically relevant model, we don't know yet. We just don't know.
You were also looking at flatworms and doing amazing experiments with flatworms. Tell me about those. I mean, I know you had some with four heads.
Yeah. The remarkable thing about flatworms is that they can regenerate after any type of injury. So no matter what body part you cut off, they will regenerate a perfect replica. And so that is a great model system in which to understand where that patterning information is stored and how we can learn to control that. Because learning to control dynamic growth is the key to preventing and fixing cancer, I think. So what we've shown is that natural patterns in bioelectric gradients are very important in the planarian flatworm to be able to know what structure it should form at any given wound. And so by manipulating or taking advantage of these gradients and changing them, we can trick the worm into building different structures at the wound. So we can make two-headed worms, four-headed worms, and so on.
And that was another very impressive aspect of your work. You can be specific about how you make these alterations, can't you?
Yes. The key is that we've spent a lot of time developing new tools and reagents, protocols and genetic and pharmacological tools with which we can be quite specific about what membrane voltage level we achieve. And this is part of mapping out what we call the bioelectric code. We really need to understand how the different voltage patterns determine different structures, and we're just beginning, the field is at a very early stage, we're just beginning to do that.
Do you think that your work and similar work will have a profound impact on how we view development and also the implications for cancer?
Well, I think development, regeneration, and cancer are all sides of one coin. I think a true understanding of development would have transformative implications for cancer. As for my work, I certainly hope it will, but we all hope that, I suppose.
And one other thing, right from the start of your talk, you said that animals that regenerate don't tend to get cancer. Is that correct?
This is true. When people talk about why it is that humans have such reduced regenerative potential relative to other species, the answer that most people are now told is that, well, that's because if you're a body plan that has access to large numbers of rapidly proliferating cells, then you would be prone to cancer. That is, that there would be an oncogenic cost associated with the ability to regenerate. And this, in fact, is completely wrong in the sense that animals that have high regenerative ability are, in fact, animals with the lowest incidence of cancer. And so it's quite clear that the ability of the body plan to exert strong patterning control over new growth is what's important for regeneration, but also for suppressing tumor formation.
And the very final point, just to get this completely clear, electrical signaling, we should be able to use electrical signals to either promote or to suppress cancer.
That's correct. Because electrical signals, and I don't necessarily mean applied electric fields, I mean patterns of voltage gradients within the tissue, are an important component of how cells know what to do. And so by tweaking those signals, we should either help cells to go along with the patterning program of the host and make normal tissue, or conversely, to abandon that plan and form tumors.
Thank you very much.